Especially in Pennsylvania. I've been everywhere, man.
I just said we're not going to jump the shark. Or do like a crossover, you know, like the Brady Bunch comes to Barnstormer.
It looks like that on Zoom.
Want to say hi, Taylor?
Yeah. Hey, guys. This is Taylor. I'm...
been promoted to immigrant.
You could say that. I'm also going to make beef broth after this for the first time, or broth of any kind, really. So I'm nervous.
You've never made broth?
No.
Okay, so
I was chastised by Julia Child on a YouTube video, and now she looked into the screen
and said, "Taylor,
if you're going to use canned broth, you should have just bought canned soup."
Oh my gosh, Taylor, you've gone to a whole nother level. When I think of Julia Childs, I think of when she held a tomato on the end of a fork and got a blowtorch and a helmet and like seared the skin off of a tomato. I think she had a lot of wine that day. Like she was just like blowing the skin with a torch, a giant like blowtorch, like a welding torch is what it looked like.
She's that's
like,
great.
Tomato. And I was like, holy shit. Like, that's really, I know everyone has one of those in their kitchen. So, you know.
This may be the kernel of a new Barnstorming spinoff about cooking.
I have more about Julia Child. My mom did this massive event in Harvard Yard. They like did pig roasts. I think there were multiple pigs and pits in Harvard Yard. There were decorations everywhere. I mean, it was really huge. This was obviously in the mid 60s.
Very welcoming to the Jews.
And my mom's Jewish, you know. Also, her nephew in later years has run Bacon Fest Chicago. So, you know,
all right.
His mom is very proud.
I'm getting a Reformed Jew vibe here. Yeah,
okay. Yeah. Anyway, my mom invited Julia Child because she didn't live that far away and she came.
Cool.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it was student-run massive event, but there was a lot of wine, apparently, and so everyone was happy, and we, for years, had the thank you note that Julia Child wrote my mom on the wall in our kitchen. Ah, those pigs. So.
I could hear it.
Was she still a CIA asset then?
I have no idea. I mean, she was living in Boston.
You know, she was a CIA asset in the
wasn't
50s.
That when she was in
was France? When she was in France, yeah.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Real quick on the broth, just so you know, but for beef broth, you need a lot of bones. Chicken broth is far more flavorful. Like you need the same weight. How much do they weigh?
I can check after we record.
It's basically 1-to-1. If you want flavorful beef broth, if you have a pound of bones, it's a pound of water. Whereas chicken, you can have a lot less, just FYI.
Interesting.
That might explain why they have those partial turkey farms in Spain.
Way to work that in, Dwayne.
Yeah, especially the inside joke to the part that I'm probably going to lop off. Well, that was Dwayne. Anyway, I think we're well into Taylor. I'm relying on you to kind of at least keep an eye on the agenda.
I thought you were because you introduced it. I can.
Well, okay. Well, why don't we start?
You're pointing out that we didn't finish introductions. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Dwayne. Okay.
Yes. So I'm Dwayne. Thank you, Sam, for facilitating that. I'm Dwayne Heisler. I work for SEIU Healthcare, and I'm involved with plenty of progressive groups, and also on the executive committee for the Democratic Party for the state of Pennsylvania. Sam.
I'm Sam Pearson. I'm in Union County. I am the COVID crank, and everyone wants COVID to end so I can stop being annoying like this.
Oh, Sam,
I heard on WKOK that I could blame you for anything, any social occasion that I wanted to get out of.
That's right. I offered that.
So the COVID crank.
Yes.
We should start a holiday where we have to leave our latex gloves and a mask.
Or by the back door
or something like that.
I was going to say we could call it Cranksgiving, and we could, you know, be thankful for the people who give us permission structures to get out of the things we want to get out of.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm basically like, if you need someone to, provide the excuse, just say so-and-so said I couldn't. I will be the horrible person. I'm awful. I know it. No
universal,
problem.
I would. But if Sam found out.
Right. Right. So the universal bad cop. Well, anyway, I thought a first thing to do, if we could go around the horn, is especially because it's, you know, I think for a lot of folks, it's a longer weekend this weekend. Is there something you're reading, watching, listening to that you wanted to give a shout out to or you're interested in?
I can start. I, on Monday, I took my girlfriend to the airport. It was very sad. She's getting some dental surgery in Turkey. But
sorry,
on the way back,
is it sad that she's getting surgery or that you're saying goodbye to her?
Well, both. Well, it's not sad. It's just uncomfortable dental surgery. She's getting a root canal. Yikes. But I picked up one of the last copies available, or on the shelf rather, I don't know what's available, of the English English version of Barack Obama's new book. And I've been reading, flying through that. It's incredible. I hope to get through most of it soon.
Somebody else want to go?
I only and always read tables about COVID stats. However, because of the holiday, I know that they're going to be even less regularly updated. So I am planning on watching Jingle Jangle, and it won't quite come out this weekend, but I'm anticipating getting and immediately reading Ijeoma Oluo's new book, Mediocre, The Dangerous Legacy of White Male America. Was I supposed to say something fun?
No.
That's okay.
Go ahead, Dwayne.
Yeah, I was inspired by a conversation with Sam, and I ended up buying Teal Bernie by Chuck Rocha. I want to read all about what he did in Vegas and in Florida and about what he did in Texas and his life. And I've already started highlighting it and taking some notes because I'm going to need this. It wasn't good enough to point out our kind of lackluster, I think, attempt to reach out to the Latino community, Latinx community in Pennsylvania. And rather than just, I want to do something about it going forward. So I thought this was a good place to kind of root myself in this kind of work.
I actually love that we just amended this. It would be fun to check back in a week or two and see, you know, what people have found. I'm going to say I always mess up her name. Zeynep Tufekci. Is that right? Zeynep Tufekci. The Twitter and Tear Gas I bought a while ago. It's a book about, I think the subtitle is like the limits and possibilities of networked protest or something like that. But we'll do that next week. I'm looking forward to reading that. And the other one I wanted to throw out is something about talking about Thanksgiving reminded me that I've always had a soft spot for the Peanuts Thanksgiving special. So it's hard to get my 16 and 20 year old children to to watch things with me. Dwayne, I'm so ADD. If you put something in the chat, I'm going to respond to it.
We're doing a great job of running a tighter ship, guys.
Yeah. Listen, it's artisanal. Sometimes the artisanal podcasting, you know, it's like artisanal beer. You can see the yeast floating in the beer bottle.
Lots of partial turkeys.
Yeah, lots of partial turkeys. But anyway, I love that one. Just something goofy about it. I don't know if everybody's seen it, but, you know, they're making the like toast and jelly beans and pretzels for the Thanksgiving meal. So I think I'm going to do a little nostalgia run. All right. So one of the things we wanted to do was a headline. We're all supposed to bring a headline. I think it's, if I remember correctly, it's like for this week or news this week or, right, it doesn't have to per se be the election. Is that correct? Okay. So I'll go first. Mine was, we all see the emperor's new clothes. Am I supposed to explain why? Okay.
Yeah. I think
part of it, it's vague enough. Okay. Is it shorter? Did I meet a better version of the shorter?
Yeah.
So for me, I was thinking about how Trump is in this sort of total, like the lamest of lame ducks. Right. I was actually thinking something I just heard today where they were talking about how Rudy Giuliani has fallen from grace with the media. But I actually think the media is the other way around. It's like it's not that anything changed about Rudy Giuliani. It's that the media caught up to who he really is. And I was thinking a similar thing with Trump. It's like, finally, and that was why the emperor has, you know, he's always had these new clothes that he's been parading around about. But it's as opposed to the classic fairy tale, you know, the media has been telling us what great clothes they are. And finally, we, all of us, right, partly because of the media shift in narrative, can see that he's you know, he's a hollow suit and he's just a huge Trump temper tantrum or Trumper tantrum or something like that. So that's why I went with that.
Yeah. I feel like it's coming, but as soon as he gets the stench of defeat on him, I think he's going to have a lot less power in the country and the Republican Party. And
I
think it's happening. I think we're seeing it right now.
It's interesting. I can't quite tell, like, local, media comment strings are still have the extreme, you know, yeah, sort of MAGA tots, maggots posting in them, but it does seem to be a little bit lighter, and I can't tell whether they've literally all gone to Parler.
Yeah, they're all in Parler now. Yeah.
Just on that real quick, and then I'll just move to another headline. One of these that I follow is this Facebook forum, and a lot of them did go to Parler about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And the meanness and the nastiness of what comes back, like they sometimes post screenshots, has increased to my eye.
I totally believe that. Really quickly, I'll do my headline next, but just a comment on your thing, Jordy. Did you guys see that that poll that had the 2024 Republican primary and Trump? Had about 50%, and then the next person was Mike Pence with about 10, and slightly below him was Don Jr. And I just, who in their right mind would take a look at that survey and be like, not senior, I want junior.
Well, clearly not very many.
Well, I mean, it's one in ten.
I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, how much of that is recency bias for people? Like, they just, I mean, if you just ask people to name Republicans, if you didn't give them a list of choices, I'd be curious about.
Yeah.
To pull in Ezra, I'd be curious about the methodology. But still. Yeah.
Also, why not Ivanka? She's so much more intelligent. Anyway, yeah. here's my headline. Obama posts 2.3 million character memoir, / only first installment, !! I imagine this is like a ticker going by. And I've just been reading Obama's memoir, and it's very inspiring, and it's a 768-page book. It's huge, but I'm flying through it, and it just, part of it is like, I feel like I haven't, since I finished my thesis in June and with COVID and everything, I feel like I just haven't been digesting such long trains of thought. You know, just like such well thought out arguments, you know, so somebody setting something up in the first few chapters to come back to it in page 500. It's really great to, the longest thing I'll ever, digest is like a 50 minute podcast. So it's really cool.
Is it really the first installment? I mean, I didn't read the earlier book. Or books, right?
There's two. There's Dreams of My Father and The Audacity of Hope.
Right. So are those earlier installments, and this is just part three, the presidential years, you know?
I read part of one of them.
No, I couldn't actually get through them. This one is, I thought the other ones were kind of erudite. And this one is very readable, but it does start from childhood and goes through his first term.
Oh, well, so because I guess Dreams of My Father was also fairly autobiographical, in a way.
It was autobiographical, but he got that book deal right after he became the first black head of the Harvard Law Review. So it's like one of his, like, you know, he was probably in his early 30s or late 20s when he wrote it.
I do remember this one thing, and then we should probably move to Duane. It's interesting because I think a week or two ago I talked about how I had this friend who used to work in government who told me that there's no way that Trump would be able to keep his Twitter account. I don't know if you'll remember saying that. This was like right after he's elected. And I was like, I don't know. I can picture him holding on to it, you know, and I just think back, not to that she was really wrong, but it was just so shocking, right? That to sort of the White House sense of, I'm sorry, inside the Beltway sensibility that a president would do that. But Obama had a similar thing. He kept a journal, I think, all through his presidency. And I remember hearing something at one point that people were very anxious, like political handlers, because like, what was he writing in there? You know, could it be subpoenaed? So I wonder if his book was partially, you know, he had, because he's one of, he's so, I mean, I know he's temperamentally different from Trump, but it's at the most extreme in the fact that he's a reflective man who writes. And Trump is like the exact opposite of that, regardless of policies. So it'd be interesting if Obama used his journal for his book. Did he say?
Yeah.
Soon to come, collected tweets of Donald Trump.
Oh, God.
Yeah, 2015, 2019.
We need to move on from that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like, okay. So a few weeks ago, immediately following the elections, I came up with like election relief, COVID fears. That was kind of like my headline. And I was thinking election relief in terms of when, now that you mentioned Obama, Taylor, like that was about election hope. Like we were, you know, his campaign was all about hope. He began with hope. He ended with hope. And then we went into fear with Trump. And then we went into like the overall feeling, I think, was relief. Like, oh, finally, like that's like into relief. And then last week when we were talking about doing this podcast, I was thinking that what I was feeling was that we were coming to terms. And I guess where I was thinking about that was like what Jordy just said, the idea that we have, you know, the American people have spoken, we have elected a new leader, we're coming to terms with that. And we see some of that even developing, you know, like even further now with, you know, like getting back to some kind of normalcy, you know, in a way, and that happening, but also around COVID too, because I felt like, a week ago, like everyone was talking about Thanksgiving dinners and I had friends that were getting together for Thanksgiving, just completely ignoring the fact that we're in a pandemic and what the numbers are doing. But then I saw some people cancel and I thought, oh, maybe we are coming to terms. Maybe we are dealing with this. But then yesterday, going to pick up a pie in a socially distanced way, believe it or not, I drive by two local restaurants where the parking lots are filled with people. And I just thought that I couldn't in good conscience say that my title is we are coming to terms, because we're not. And I think that that has to do with the fact that we still had 40% that probably didn't change their mind about Trump either. So maybe we're really not coming to terms with the election either. I think it's more accurate to say is, are we really thankful? Like, how can we be really thankful when we have those Trumpsters out there that have not changed their mind and believe fake news, right? This fantasy about, you know, who won the election and if there was fraud. And are we really thankful when we have healthcare workers who are literally dying, healthcare workers, and we have, you know, I heard from two hospitals that they are now out of ICU beds, in one of them that they don't have enough respirators, like we're hitting that. And the projections from the governor's office for the next 2 weeks, like to the middle of December, are beyond gloom and doom, that we're going to start seeing this all across the state and they've issued new things. And so how can we, you know, the day before Thanksgiving, when we're talking about what we're thankful for, and everyone is quick to say, oh, yes, thank God for our healthcare workers, but yet they go out and don't wear a fucking mask, right? That's bullshit. And I don't think we are really thankful. I don't think we've really thought that through. So I think my headline is, you know, the day before Thanksgiving is, are we really thankful?
I also don't know if you meant this, but I also like the we being a bit like in play, right? Because like Thanksgiving emerged in the Civil War, like the way we know it best, as a day of unity. And going to what you said, like we, because we won, may feel thankful, but there's not a lot of we of all of us. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, you may not have meant that, but when I was listening to it, that's one thing I got, which was like, the we is also in play.
Well,
yeah. I mentioned that kind of with the 40% Trump. Like, there's no unity around that, right?
Jordy also asked in the chat whether, you know, is there any healthcare worker aid or relief fund we can promote? But you know what? At the United Way Public Health Forum last week, healthcare workers were asked, how can we best support you? And you want to know what they said? Wear the damn mask, wash your hands, keep your distance, and don't have Thanksgiving. Please and thank you. You know, so that really is the best way to support healthcare workers is to just take the damn thing seriously, do the things that need to be done. And we're so bad at that.
You ready for your headline?
I do think, sure.
Oh, sorry, I didn't get you off.
We're really bad at this.
Yes. You mean my headline? Well,
both.
No. But as the headline, we're really bad at this.
All of
it. No context.
Okay, yeah. Right. Well, I mean, I'm bad at making headlines, so I'll do a. Here's the headline version. You ain't seen nothing yet, but the thing that I've been trying to work with is national numbers exceed, you know, confirmed spring cases and hospitalization stats on path to also exceed actual spring cases and death stats. And so that's really not a headline. That's like the whole article. You know, there's just a lot there. But that's really where we are. And we're just sort of in this in between lull, between things starting to rise, people sometimes taking it easy and, you know, stay in cash, and the rest of us getting more and more frantic because we're like, all of these numbers are from what we were doing 2 weeks ago. Our numbers 2 weeks from now are because of what you're doing right now. And our numbers 3 weeks from now are from what you're going to do tomorrow. So can you not do it already?
And all the COVID deniers are going to go to the parlor.
Right. So it's hard to, you know, in our paper today, a psychologist who works at Evan did have a piece, and he said, you know, we really do need to, for health's sake, try to, you know, stay home for Thanksgiving, but this is really hard on some people. And so we shouldn't judge people that must do it for some reason or another. And I think that's where we have a really hard time assessing who falls in that must category, because there are surely a huge number of people, right? The come and take it, you know, Ted Cruz meme with a picture of a turkey, which had the most excellent response from Parker Malloy on Twitter, come and get it, with a picture of a coronavirus, you know? So
Parker Malloy,
I think
is that a person?
Yeah. I mean, we do need to balance these things.
Balance which things?
The sort of real needs to, like, there are some people who are really hurting because of isolation and stuff like that. But we should also try to figure out if there are other ways we can do it that we're not balancing, you know, infecting grandma. You know, surely there are other options for creating community and connection.
So, Sam, I think you said we ain't seen nothing yet. That's pretty good for your headline. Dwayne, do you want to offer up your alternative spin?
I was on mute and then flip screens there. But I don't like it, but it's well said, Sam. You know, like, you ain't seen nothing yet. And I thought of, you know, we talk about, like, all the food that we have, the spread that we have for Thanksgiving. And so Thanksgiving provides super spread, right? Like, I don't know if you heard the report today about how many people are traveling by plane over the holiday, which is just amazing to me. I'm thinking about how careful I am about going outside, no less the idea of making my way to an airport and traveling for hours on a plane. And then, like, all the things that you would touch, all the things you would breathe, like, and then visiting a relative saying, hey, I'm safe, I'm here, right? I guess I shouldn't be laughing. It just seems so ridiculous. Like, what kind of alternative universe are we in where we can even pretend that that's a safe thing to do?
We're in a universe where we're being asked to pay attention to all those things in ways we've never been asked to pay attention to them before, right? That's just the between time. That's the time, the sort of purgatory you endure any year for, like, during ridiculous Thanksgiving travel. It's sort of this misery time that between when you leave your house and you get where you're going, for many people, you know, who don't just go down the road to grandma's. And so we're used to purposely ignoring it. And right now we're being asked to scrutinize things that we never look at closely and then grade them on a scale that has nothing to do with normal life, right? Like how much aerosols from other people we might be inhaling, you know?
Yeah, I wish I had never known about that.
Right.
Ew.
Yeah, there's actually a quote from, was it the ice storm that goes with yeah. that, you know?
I could have gone without all of those gifts of people's aerosols being spread all over the room.
Shedding, right?
That yeah.
stuff too, right? There's some really gross things. And the mixing of that with Thanksgiving is just like not right. Like we all hate cranberry sauce, right? I don't know, maybe we do like it. But it just makes it more gross, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Shedding too right now, and maybe virus. Is it true you can fit like a million like on the head of a pin?
I don't know. Is that part of the true false today? Because I'm not clear on that.
I forgot we were going to be doing that. Yeah,
but. I just wrote mine. I think we wanted to transition now to a sort of somewhat deeper dive about COVID. I think we kind of already did that, but just. Just you know, to the rest of us. So that's one reason why Sam.
I was just going to say, since Sam has volunteered to be the chief Saint, crank for Cranksgiving,
or like
Saint Crank. But I would suggest that Sam could in fact be the Sergeant Major General in the war on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, oh, but I think no. There are too many people who want to crown me that already. So
I think
they just see this as another bid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the Wicked Witch of crankiness of the West is like it's so much more generous because she's really offering like something that people can use, whereas the Major General is like ordering people around. I actually think
it's more of an active role.
I think our title for this podcast should be Cranksgiving.
That's fine. I think we're also trying to get past Thanksgiving because, I mean, realistically, people are going to have already had Thanksgiving by the time they hear this because they are busy doing other things at the moment. Well, but
go ahead.
There's going to be a lot of listens as people are basting their turkeys and waiting for the.
Okay,
that's right. Most podcasts probably go dark this week, whereas we're filling the gap.
That's true. There is a content gap. There's going to be, so I actually do think there's a number of things to talk about post-Thanksgiving with COVID though. And one of them actually is a content gap. I sort of alluded to it earlier, but those of us who watch the numbers literally obsessively are familiar already with cyclicity, whether it's weekends or,
Can you say that again? Cyclicity?
Cyclicity. Like oh, cyclicity. There are cycles to this. Cyclicity.
I dismiss her.
Okay. And so basically weekends reporting, there's a dip in reporting. Different states have different reporting patterns. Locally, we have an issue because Bureau of Prisons only reports, intermittently. And so all of those things will be further interrupted. Like the flow of information is going to be further interrupted, one, by the holiday. Hospitals, health professionals, morgues, like everyone has less attention and time over holiday weekends. So we'll probably lose some continuity in our data with that. Unfortunately, some states are also getting to a point where we're going to lose continuity in data because they're overloaded with data. And so things tend to go a little bit even more dark when at their darkest, right? Like, so there are some states that are getting bad now, like Kansas and Nebraska, that already have very intermittent posting and reporting. And as things get worse, I'm sort of assuming that will...
I wouldn't call that a content gap, though. I'd call it a data gap and an interruption in your cyclicity. Just because also to me, content should like there's actually something I don't know if we can tease this out now, but like as you were talking, I was thinking about how different people read the numbers differently, right? Like this is I don't know enough about the history of the 1918 flu epidemic to really talk about this, but like we have a society now, we have an information ecology where lots of people can see the numbers and to sound like an ass, they have no business looking at the numbers, right? Like they don't really know how to read them. Whereas in other eras, I feel like people were maybe forced to be more reliant on particular authoritative voices. And so the ways in which this is played out are different because of that.
I think we want to remind ourselves too, and I know we get it. Like I know there are people out there that get it, but when we're talking about numbers, we're talking about lives. And I think sometimes we get caught in the math of it and don't fully realize, you know, what it means when it's your grandmother, or what it means when it's your child, or what it means when it's your husband or your wife, and what that means. And so I know I do, like I have, and I have to catch myself that people really don't care about facts, and the ultimate expression of a fact are statistics, right? Like they don't care about that. Like it doesn't have an impact. And we have to think about, like, if the goal is to have an impact about these things and to help change behavior, persuade, or to just have someone realize, have an aha moment, then we somehow have to meet them where they are. And they're not about the square root of something. They're not about projections, you know.
I think that, yeah.
You know, so.
The humanity is very emphatic. And I think you're right. Like we maybe sound like we're not being empathetic or compassionate, but all of the one reason we're so anxious about these quote numbers is that they are all so hugely individually significant. Like the quanta that we are talking here are individual lives, right? And the ability of people to ignore that and dismiss that, even in listening to us, is problematic. So you're right, we need to reemphasize it. I think there's also a countervailing trend, which is, you know, the shitlords among us, and they are.
I don't know who the shitlords are.
Yeah, what is it? What is this?
Shitlords among us. That sounds like a wonderful film.
I'm talking like, I mean, honestly, you know, trolls on BVCF, and you know, people in our local community are all about sort of pushing the envelope of, you know, being realistic, right? So in fact, herd immunity. Sorry.
Just pause for a minute. I think what you're saying, just so I understand, is that they are pushing the envelope of what they want to have to be considered realistic, when what they want to have in the space of realistic is actually insane. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. They want, I mean, they're quote pushing the Overton window, right? So that it's more and more acceptable to say grandma should die, right? Didn't we have
David Rowe,
governor from Texas.
Yeah. And David, but I agree with you. David Rowe.
I mean, they're like, yeah, grandma should take one for the team.
They basically say there's risks. You know, their version of this that's nice is, yeah, hey, there's risks in everything.
So that's the exact opposite of emphasizing that each number means something. It's saying even the grandmas don't mean anything in the bigger picture of the economy.
And the epitome of that is it's affecting people that are already sick. Like, what? You know, like that is the most nihilistic thing you could possibly.
Go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah. So I asked someone about this because Nicole, my friend, our friend Nicole, you know, she lost her father-in-law. And, you know, one of the first questions she gets asked by someone was, well, how old was he? And I just wonder, like, under what circumstances, if you had a relative come to you, like if your mother came to you or your father came to you and said, your grandmother just died, would you say, well, how old was she?
We are bad at that. We're also bad at that. Don't ignore that we're really bad when someone says.
I don't like the level of dysfunction in a family that when you're told about a death in it, that you immediately ask, well, how old were they? They were going to die.
Well, they wouldn't say that. They would say, oh, it's probably for the best.
Have to ask them though, like, well, why would you ask that question? And the answer to that is they're being fucking political.
I'm on Dwayne's side in this. I think before the pandemic, right, you might have been like, oh, how old were they? Because you're sort of saying, was it sudden? Did they live a long life? I feel like in this moment, depending on how it's asked, it is completely like, well, they were going to go anyway.
Well, it's also bad statistics, right? Because they'll be like, well, there were 81 and the average age of death is 85. And it's like, the average age of additional life, if you're already 81, is more than 4 years. That 85 is because right. a bunch of people died younger.
Well, this goes back to what I was saying about people who have no business. I mean, this is this push and pull between expertise and the democratization of information. You know, it's, I think there is a tension there, right? Just giving everybody the numbers doesn't necessarily make us collectively smarter or wiser. And not only that, I don't know if we're going to get into any like more solid facts. But I was just thinking about how, like, also, like, I probably of the four of us look at COVID numbers the least, even when you guys do it the right way. So I'm looking for support here. But my impression is the demographics of who is dying from infections is shifting, you know, by the day, week, and month, right? So this idea that it's only old people is completely fallacious, even if it was proportionally more old people early. That's not even accurate. In other words, if 90% of the deaths were a certain age range in April, or 90% was an older set of people, it's less and less and less.
It is true that the risk of both hospitalization and death is much higher at higher ages, like by like a factor of 600.
But that's
600,
true like, of almost everything except the 1918 flu.
Yes, right. The 1918 flu was actually inverted so that young people were sort of young adults were most at risk. And in this case, actually, I recently arguing with trolls on Facebook have shared a graphic from CDC that uses the 19 to 29 age group as the base datum for mortality and then compares mortality for all other age groups, hospitalization and mortality for all other age groups. And that's where you do get these like ridiculously high factors for the elderly compared to that age group. But what we're also seeing is that more and more people are getting it. And even if you don't die, and there are lots of other impacts. And
oh, that's a huge thing that doesn't get talked about.
Right. And those impacts, those can happen at any age, right? And their heart impacts, their circulation, their, you know.
There's this whole thing that it's more of a circulatory disease than a respiratory disease.
And what if it's like malaria, where you just get occasional flare-ups for the rest of your life? You know, we don't even know.
We don't know yet. And there are people, there was just a paper that came out very recently that talks about the that tries to put a timeline on these typical phases. And what they draw are three different phases, the sort of early acute phase that is sort of most visible, a secondary phase, which can be inflammatory syndrome and it can be tied to the first phase or independent. You can, and then a third phase, which is long-term sequela. So these, you know, heart impacts or, you know, other sort of resurging issues. Some people are getting fevers repeatedly. Some people have this brain fog that continues for months. Those kinds
what
of things.
If I had
continuing.
That before COVID,
one of the things,
the brain fog.
Right, then it doesn't count.
It reverses
no
it.
Maybe you're pregnant, Jordy. So I think the other thing is that they point out is you don't have to go through any one of the phases to go through the others. So you just get infected and then you could have all three. You could have the first one and not the other two. You could have the second one, you know. And so that's one of the ways it's multifarious. And who knows, like you said, Taylor, there could be, you know, stage four or maybe stage three just goes on forever.
Okay, so hold on, pause. Did you say sequela?
Sequela, yeah.
What's that?
Medical term for sequel to a symptom and disease.
Is that really a value added jargon?
It's literally how it's. Well,
I understand, but if we're trying to be accessible to people, I mean,
I'm not on WKOK, okay?
Fine, I've learned two words: cyclicity and sequela. Go ahead, Dwayne.
I would also say that all of what we're talking about, you know, all of this being true and what we're seeing happening, we also can't forget the disproportional impact that this has on Black and Brown families, right? Like, and being able to communicate that, because I mean, I was kind of typing away, like, is it only the youth that are deserving of our compassion? Is it only our families that are deserving? Like, other families, screw them. Like, only our families are deserving of compassion? Because, I mean, the common narrative is like, well, when it happens to you or someone you know, then that changes you. And so then are we giving permission when that doesn't happen to actually behave in a way that doesn't show compassion? Like, who are we? Who do we aspire to be? And is it only deserving for someone who looks like me? So, like, okay, it's all right because I'm white, right? Because it's disproportionately affecting Black and Brown folks. I have less compassion there too. So there's that whole element as well that we have to remember when we go forward, because, and this is how it ties to our election, Black and Brown and white people all spoke and they all voted, and we have new leadership to move us forward together to address these two issues. And we have to start talking about it.
That's a really good point, Dwayne. And before we wrap this topic up, the thing that I get frightened about, and I know that I'm preaching to the choir here, the thing that I get frightened about
I'm
the most,
in no one's choir. Have you ever heard me sing?
So funny. So if there's like a 2-week window here where the virus is incubating and people are getting sick and getting tested, 2 weeks after Thanksgiving, that's like 10 days before Christmas, you know? And so, like, God, can you imagine 10 days before Christmas and we're like in this swamp of cases and people are like, we have to cancel Christmas. And that's like 10 times worse than not gather for Thanksgiving. And it's just, I can just imagine like a literal and physical like fever enveloping the country about, you know, like, oh, we're totally fucked. I'm really concerned about like two weeks from now.
There's a newspaper.
There's
a newspaper in Mississippi that actually had the, you know, won the headlines for the month that said after large Thanksgiving get togethers, plan small Christmas funerals.
I mean, yeah, I mean, Taylor, I mean, it's sweet of you to say the country, because of course you're safe on the other side of the ocean, or safer, I feel like. But
I'm having a delightful time in the control group over here.
But what I was going to say is
you're a control hamster, Taylor. Yeah. Hamster.
You know, me being the person who's less versed in some of the numbers, like Taylor, you were saying, we might be. I look at the sort of what we're in this space of widespread community spread and the persistent lack of compliance by huge chunks of the American population. It's not we might be in that situation you described. We will be. I mean, I just think there's no doubt. I mean, I can't imagine any change that's going to change that. Sam, is that right?
Yes. It's basically at this point a question of how high are we going to go? And that's what I was trying to get out with my subheading, which is we actually do have data and we're already past the hospitalization rates of the spring. It's spread out over far more hospitals. What's happening?
Nothing.
There is music playing in my headphones suddenly.
It's on your end.
It's on your end. So...
really disturbing.
Figure that out, we'll.
Okay, I got it. It's gone.
Okay. Sure. What else are you hearing in your head, Sam? Who's talking to you?
I know the voices. It was purely instrumental. I swear.
Yeah.
Sorry, lost thread.
You were saying how high can we go in terms of how bad it'll get with hospitalization rates and.
Right. So, I mean, that's hard for people to get their brains around, and the delay is also hard. So we look now retrospectively at the spring, and we can see the big peaks that are roughly around the same time. But if you really bring them up into focus, you will see that, you know, we started hitting the peak of hospitalizations in New York, and not for another 2 weeks did we have the peak of deaths, that, you know, the death counts getting to the height.
So,
and
just because we've been on this for a while, I was going to suggest to kind of wrap this up. I don't know if this will work, but I feel like there's so many issues. Would it work if we kind of all like took a moment and just, you know, pull out maybe one issue, whether it's scientific or sociological or policy? Like, is there one thing that, you know, you've like in your own mind, you're like, I'm keeping my eye on this because it matters for what how this plays out. Does that make sense? Just to kind of at least, because I feel like we covered a lot of ground in this and I wanted to try and, does that make sense? Like what's like one question or issue you're going to be following for the next week or two? Just one, Sam.
Hey,
Sam can have mine. I'm not paying.
All right.
Well, I mean, I'm not, I have some takeaways. I'm not sure this is what I would be following. It's more
just in
light of
want.
All of this.
Yeah.
In light of all this, the thing that I want everyone to pay attention to is whatever you're doing this weekend, you need to be even more careful after Thursday and into December. You know, the next month is going to be really key. Our behavior now determines outcomes in a couple of weeks. Even when we do the best, our best, we can slip up and make mistakes and, you know, anyone can get sick. So just try to be ultra, extra, special, cautious. Even as we are doing that for our own sort of personal health to the extent that we can, and also as a result, our community's health, try to simultaneously do what you can in this season to support the local economy so that we aren't just, you know, doubling down on a personal lockdown, but you are maybe getting gifts through local companies, supporting friends who are artists, you know, for trying to anticipate Christmas in a slightly less bleak way.
That's great. I feel like there's a lot of innovative things that can come out of the second thing you were saying, right? Like people taking the act of gift giving to help local economies. I have one I wanted to touch on. If I can go, Dwayne, do you have something? Okay. So for me, one thing that and maybe it's our people already following it, but I'm going to combine two thoughts here. One is the sort of incredible spikes now and what we were talking about, these sort of the further ratcheting up of more and more of the pandemic's effects on rural communities. So that's one thing. The second thing is this phrase I got actually from Anant Shankarasaryo's some webinar last week, which was place baiting. I'd never heard this before, but it's like there's race baiting and there's place baiting. And the way those go together is, you know, I think it is true that we have more and more different experiences of America between urban and rural, more so now than in the past. So we see that play out in criminal justice conversations. We see it play out in other ways that people experience things. And I think that's been part, at least in our area, of why some people feel like they don't have to take it seriously. It's not here, right? It's over there. And so they can place bait. Oh, that's a problem of, you know, prisons. That's a very local one. It's a problem of Philly. We may get to a place, Dwayne, where it's hurting Black and Brown people, but we're going to see from October through February that it also hurt rural people.
I'd like to comment on it because I was on the same conversation and it made me think back to something. I was born in Brooklyn. I moved around quite a bit. And as a kid, I moved from Brooklyn to Jim Thorpe. There was incredible culture shock there, moving from there to the Poconos, the southern edge of the Poconos and the woods and things like that. And one of the phrases that I heard, and this was in the 70s, one of the phrases that I heard about any kind of progress that was being made in Jim Thorpe was, this place is becoming just like New York. You know, like they would talk about the traffic on the main street on Broadway in downtown Jim Thorpe as being, oh, all the traffic that's there. Yeah, it's hard to find a parking place. This is getting as bad as New York. Like it was always like this place baiting that was happening. Like we're here and that's there and that's worse. It's another expression of the outsider. Right. And this I took personal offense to because I was from New York and I thought you have no freaking idea what that even means, you know, like I hear exactly what you're saying. And we need to be aware of that happens very often in rural communities. That's part of our rural urban divide right there is the language that we use about comparing ourselves in those kind of ways in negative ways.
So do you want to add something for the sort of like what you're looking at for COVID?
What I'm looking at for COVID, I think I'm going to take, and I have been planning to take Sam's advice to heart, that I'm going to be more careful about everything. And I've already begun to do that. I plan on having plenty of leftovers for Thanksgiving. And I am prepared to do, you know, all of my work from at home. Thank goodness I'm lucky enough to have a job where I can do that. I'm going to be making choices to not go outside if I don't have to not visit someone. If I'm going to think twice before picking up my car keys, that do I really need that? Do I really need that now, or could I wait another month, right? Could I wait another 2 months? And I'm going to really be consciously aware and be purposeful making those decisions to not only keep myself safe, but to keep others safe as well.
So I think we're going to move to true, false, right? I know I have my two do's. How do you imagine this going, Taylor? Well, each person will do their two.
Yeah. Does everybody have to? Because we could ask, if Dwayne doesn't have his, we could all ask Dwayne.
I just hinted at it anyway.
Okay, I assume Dwayne would say is that we all guess.
Why don't we go it as a round and one at a time?
All right, Dwayne, do you want to do yours first?
Well, yeah, I'll put it here. Yeah. Is it true that you can have 100 million viral particles of the novel coronavirus? Does that fit on the end on the head of a pin?
True. What do you guys say?
100 million.
I say 100 million.
100 million particles of the coronavirus on the head of a pin.
I don't know. The pictures are all really big. So
they have all those.
I think false.
Yeah, I say false.
Like when
too.
I put my hands around the picture, it's like the size of my screen, right? So yeah, no, it's true.
Wow.
100 million viruses on the head of a pin.
Jordy wins. Okay.
Yeah, you gotta keep your own score.
An early lead.
Okay, here's
that's a frightening thing to bring to the table.
How many loofahs does it take to remove 100 million?
All it takes is soap. That's it.
How many control hamsters with loofahs?
Now I'm actually fascinated by that. I don't want to get into it, but something about soap molecularly kills viruses. Is that?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Don't I want to go. Okay. Here's my first one. Both of these.
Jordy, it has to do with lipids and surfactants, and they dissolve the surface of the virus.
The protein shell that the, yeah. Okay. Awesome. Fun, random, stupid fact about me. I did the best in high school in chemistry of the sciences, and it's the one I like the least. So Nixon left office because he lost the support of rank and file Republicans. True or false?
True.
False.
True.
It's false. The Republican rank and file supported him. It was the Republican politicians who turned on him that pushed him out.
Oh.
Okay.
He still had
35% approval or something.
Oh, even higher.
I was thinking about how the politicians turned. I wasn't thinking rank and file.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
I was thinking more of the politicians
turned against them. But I feel like that's interesting. Okay, here's the next one, which we'll see how
are
it
we,
goes.
Are
over.
We doing I, all
I thought
of ours?
We were, I thought we just, were going.
No, let me do both of mine because then it's.
Oh, okay. This way. We've been the rules for because Jordan. He's special.
Look, I'm. It's the zeitgeist. I change the rules as I go along.
no rules. It's 2020. I'm going now. Yeah. You can't stop me.
Yeah.
Gore versus Bush was the narrowest popular vote margin among 20th century presidential elections.
False.
I have no idea.
I'm gonna guess it was Nixon Kennedy. This is the closest.
You said popular vote, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know. Yes, 50-50. I'll say I want it to be true, but I'll say false.
Okay, so I actually don't know because I was only thinking.
You were thinking of incumbent, or no?
Everybody gets a vote. I wasn't thinking of the total. I was thinking that the margin was 537 in Florida, but I forgot about the whole country. And moreover, I was going to say that Bush v. Gore is 21st century, but it is Nixon Kennedy is on the national. That's true.
That was a super close election, but not close for the popular vote.
Wait, so do we have an answer or not?
I think it's such a bad question. I think you all get
no more questions for you. Like no soup for you. No questions for you. We're done. Off.
But you all get a point. Give yourselves a point. And Taylor, give yourself two for knowing.
I want the answer.
No,
the answer. I'm pretty sure that Taylor's right.
Okay,
it's Nixon. I want to actually look because this is a great example of why the electoral.
Okay, but let's just resolve this. Was that election a 20th century election or a 21st century election?
Because the entire campaign happened during the 20th century.
Well, it's an interesting taxonomic question. I actually would say it's a 20th century election. So,
Okay. There were Kennedy got 49.72% of the vote and Nixon got 49.55% of the vote. It was super close.
Like, so 0.3%.
Yeah, 112,000 votes.
I think Bush lost Kennedy, the popular vote.
Kennedy won by like 70 electoral college votes. So it wasn't that close, but it was very close.
And our takeaway just be, let's screw the electoral college and do away with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, we got 3 out of 4. Sam then answer. Okay. She's reserving her comment. Well,
yeah, let's I don't like the way rural communities or rural states use this, but a lot of people are like, there is no one rural sort of position. But I do think at the same time, there does need to be some balancing. I think the way it's balanced is idiotic and ridiculous.
I think the way our government's balanced is the Senate. And let's like use that as the balancing mechanism. Yeah,
that's fair.
President.
Yeah.
The Senate is more conservative than the Electoral College. Actually,
as you would imagine,
Electoral College gets
so, so that's reflected there. Why reflected as well in another branch of government?
I like that. Yeah.
Okay. True and false. But, Taylor, you're next.
Okay. Over. Let me pull this up so I get the wording right. I don't want to have a bad question. Over 90%. There was over 90% turnover rate among senior ranking advisors in the executive office of the president during the Trump administration.
Yes, true.
Say it one more time.
There was over a 90% turnover rate among senior ranking advisors in the executive office of the president, which doesn't include cabinet secretaries. It does not include cabinet secretaries. Just
I don't really know what senior ranking is. You guys both said like, true. I mean, I'm going to say true. Yeah. I'm going to say true as well, but I feel like it might be like 84% and you're playing with this. So I'm saying true.
Usually when you use over a certain amount or under a certain amount, it's not the case, but
a lot of us,
even if it wasn't, it seems like it, right? It seemed like it. Like, was there a week by that we didn't hear about someone being fired, someone being replaced, someone like walking out, whatever.
Or the other thing is that the isolated stat doesn't mean anything without context. So how does it compare to other administrations?
I've got that information.
All right.
We're ready.
It was 91%. And it is relatively high. Obama was 71%.
Of course, turnover
over the course of 4 years.
Over the course of
eight.
Actually, over the course of this is actually just the first term.
Okay. 70%. Wow. So probably Obama.
71%.
I would
Bush was 63%.
So real quick. So I just want to keep track of your own score. I know I have 2 points. I don't know if you guys kept track of yours.
I don't think I've got a single one.
All right.
No idea.
Okay.
Next one. I don't know about Jordy, if I win. I haven't done questions yet.
Go ahead, Taylor. Next question.
Well, here's
Taylor has another.
Okay. I do have another one. True or false? You can donate to the Central PA Food Bank by going to centralpafoodbank.org.
Oh, come on. True.
I believe that is true.
Is it .com?
Google it.
I hate to sow that
thank you.
Uncertainty in there. It is .org.
Public service announcement.
Thank public you, service announcement. CentralPAFoodBank.org.
We all win.
$5. It'll help somebody tremendously.
That's awesome, Taylor. Thank you for that.
Yeah. So true?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So can you do it from Sweden?
Of course I can donate.
Well, sometimes there are...
The magic of the internet.
I don't know. I feel like sometimes if you're doing financial things, there are blockages. Anyway, go ahead. Sam, your questions?
My questions. This is a giveaway to you guys, but you can use it as a stumper for other people. We're now over 80,000 hospitalizations nationally. At the spring peak, the number was 60,000. But since the deaths are still lower now than they were in the spring, everything is fine.
Sam,
that's too many clauses, Sam.
Is Sam a good true or false question writer? No.
No. That's not even a true or false question. It's a yes or no question.
Okay. Is it true that everything is fine?
No, that is false.
No.
There you go. Good. False.
Did we? You should have added like how many people got on the train, right?
In Buffalo.
In Buffalo, yeah. And how many got off? Yeah. So what is the, yeah, what color swallow? What kind of swallow was it? Wasn't it a?
Yeah, African swallow. Okay, you guys all win. See, I write bad questions, but you all win.
And was there another question?
Yes, I have another question.
I'm excited to see if it's worse.
Oh, you're going to love this one, Jordy. Returning college students who took a test before coming home, a COVID test, can just act like normal for Turkey Day at home. True or false?
False.
True.
Wrong, Taylor.
Oh, no.
We okay. should be able to, like, somehow put electrical pulses through our keyboards this year. Ducky. Sam, those were very thoughtful PSA kind of like questions. That's wonderful. That's great. So,
let's do
last
our
segment.
Thankful. Yeah,
what we're thankful for. I can start personally. I guess in years past, you know, I would when we said this at the Thanksgiving table, we tried to do it every year. I had always said that I have a. You know, a healthy family that is so supportive and loving of me. But I feel like I was also secretly really thankful for, you know, getting into college, you know, the one that I wanted, you know, just kind of more selfish bullshit. But this year I have to say,
wait,
really driving it home.
Olaf?
Jordy, this is contextless banter bullshit for people that don't know Northfield rivalries. But this year I really just am so thankful for a healthy family and having food on the table, and just a loving and supporting group of friends. And yeah, that's, I'm so thankful. I feel like I have it all. It's great.
I'm usually bad at this kind of stuff. And
how does it compare to your true false question writing?
I'm also bad at that. So this is not playing to my strengths. But I appreciate Taylor's, and in that spirit, I will say that this year is, you know, different. And so my usual badness may have more to work with this year. I'm actually thankful for the opportunity to try to make a difference this year. And I think that isn't something to be taken for granted. I would actually be going out of my mind if I couldn't try, right? And so you guys are part of that. You guys help, you know, get messages out. I'm glad to be part of multiple different communities that are trying to get good communication and community support together. And I think that's important to not take for granted. And then I'm also at a slightly bigger scale, really thankful for my family's massively antisocial disposition and the fact that this is only hard for us and not infinitely miserable.
Mm. I'm the most extroverted person in my family.
Hmm. I have a really hard time editing myself on this. I'm like an Oscar speech with the hooks going to come out, but I had several in mind. There's this network of progressive leaders and organizers that came together around protecting the results. And we talked about this before a little bit. It's been an incredibly disciplined group about staying aligned on message. And I'm really thankful that came into being because it enabled us to have the kind of coordinated messaging and response to election protection before and after the election that back in the summer, I know I was so deeply worried about where things were going to go. So I was thankful that came into being. I want to just give a shout out to Kristen Volchansky, who's another hub facilitator, because I've gotten to know her this year and she's such a rock. She's so solid. She's just like, gets details done. She's completely unflappable. And I'm also really thankful I got to know Mel Russell, who is the president of the NAACP in Williamsport. And she's just had a lot of one-on-one conversations. And she's just such a wise and thoughtful and humorous and soulful person. And she's been been really great in my life. And lastly, just one, I just wanted to, you guys are not reducible to one dimension, but I was wanted to sort of say one thing about each of you. I'm really thankful for Dwayne's vision. Sorry. I'm really thankful for Sam's gumption. I'm really thankful for Taylor's generosity.
Thank you. Thank you, Jordy.
Yes, that was very nice. So I kind of said something like this on my Friday call. I have a regional call every Friday, and I kind of talked about some things I was thankful for there. And what I included was how thankful I am for my union, which also happens to be my job too, but the mission of the union and what it means to people's lives. And with that being said, you know, healthcare workers, essential workers, but also volunteers, kind of like what you said, Jordy, like, There are people who are essential and do work as part of their job, but then there's also these volunteers that just do incredible work, stepping up, whether that be in the moments that we've had for the last few years of our political crises that we've been dealing with, and they volunteer their time to help help us all together move forward to have a better world, or you know, at the extreme during a pandemic. You know, being able to step up like that and to somehow, you know, continue with their family and their work and then volunteer their time to go above and beyond. And that's some of you folks here too. So I wanted to acknowledge the volunteer spirit that we sometimes think is dead, but is not. And if it were, like, if it didn't exist, we would be in really rough shape politically and also in worse shape with this pandemic. And so I'm thankful for that.
Well, that's a great, great way to wrap up.
I would also,
yeah. Oops.
I would also be thankful if people could rate us on on whatever platform they listen to podcasts on. I was hoping to get that into the beginning. Sorry.
Yeah.
Taylor, the producer to the end. Yes.
Yeah. you're muted, Dwayne.
Yeah. Do we get so many turkeys? Like, I got 3.5 turkeys because we still got partial turkey, right? Yeah. I got 3 drumsticks turkey. And a wing.
Yeah. Like,
one neck. I mean, yeah.
So do people? Yeah,
I have like four wings and 2 drumsticks. What kind of turkey is that? Yeah. Okay. How do you add them together?
So do people like have favorite food traditions, either old traditions or newer things on your Thanksgiving spread? We didn't get to this earlier. I learned recently from my mother-in-law that apparently in Baltimore, sauerkraut is considered essential. And I never think of Baltimore as a particularly German city. It's got to be a German influence, but I think it's weird to have sauerkraut with your, so that's actually not my tradition. But I know for me, like there,
my
like
family always had,
go ahead.
My family always had caramel cake. We always had Thanksgiving in Tennessee.
Yeah.
That was a big special
caramel
party.
Cake. Huh. Yeah. For me, there's gotta be, the turkey is still the king. A new tradition we did last year, we'll do this year, is spatchcocking, which is just a fun word to say, but it's where you cut along the spine, you lay it flat.
It sounds a category on Pornhub.
Yeah.
I think you can be arrested in certain states for doing that. Don't let Giuliani hear you say that word.
That's right. That's right. I'm an inveterate spatchcocker. It solves the quintessential problem that the breast and the thighs cook at different rates. So it's a way to get around that. You don't get a pretty bird to present, but if you're going, you know, to me, that's like 10 seconds of performance. So that's something I'm pretty excited to do. How about y'all? Any food traditions?
I am cranberry sauce. I'm a cranberry sauce devotee. Mm. And this, we have cut back this year. We are only planning on having 2 sauces. So a fairly conventional
both warm
one, just, you know, cranberries. Mm-hmm. They aren't warm when they come to the table. No. And in fact, one is raw. So there's the conventional one, which is cooked, basically sugar, cranberries, and water. I might sneak some orange zest in there and, you know, or ginger or something. But I do like just sort of basic cranberry sauce cooked till it's just mush.
Yeah.
But I also, I do love Susan Sandberg's mother's relish, cranberry relish.
Oh, that
it is so
gross.
Good.
I made it.
It is so delicious.
Oh.
Oh my God. You also don't like hard boiled eggs.
Well, yeah.
You don't eat hard-boiled eggs. So what's wrong with you?
I tried it. This is not me just reacting, but that is, I tried it because I was so curious. I thought it was so nasty.
Okay. Most, so it is not to everyone's taste, but yeah. It is a big hit in my family, and most neither people I have shared it with have enjoyed it.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Sure.
How about you, Dwayne? Send me a link to the recipe.
I had two things I've done in the past, but I'm not planning them this year. One, I did my own cornbread oyster stuffing, which was good. And in fact, I made my own cornbread a few days ago and let it dry out so that I could use it. And so I did that from scratch. And then there was another year I was kind of experimental with my turkey, and I basted it in Frangelico in a hazelnut liqueur. And boy, was that kind of a different twist. I wouldn't do it all the time because I really like the savory turkey, but that kind of sweetened it up a little bit. It was a nice change. So that was kind of a fun thing that I had done.
Wow.
I also like just oyster bread or scalloped oysters, but I don't have the oysters. And that was nothing I experienced until I got like away from home and I was in college. And there's a wonderful woman that I've been thinking about, Editha Adams, who opened up her home to me because I had nowhere to live. And I lived with her and did chores around the house and took care of things. And she provided a home for me. And she loved oysters and she liked making them for me. And so I always think about Thanksgiving and oysters, either in, you know, scalloped oysters or in a stuffing or even just fried. And it was a nice treat because we certainly didn't have that when we were living in Brooklyn. So
I mean, it's probably some sort of bivalve almost surely would have been on the original Thanksgiving feasts in New England. It's probably as or more traditional than turkey. So we're definitely wrapping up. I just remember two things. One is just a shout out to Pam Garvin, a dear, dear friend to all of us. Father Harry passed away about a week ago. She told me, you know, that they're doing, you know, as well as can be expected. She and her husband, Doug, are going through the house. And I never got to really meet him. I don't know if anybody else did, but I know he lived to the ripe old age of 103, something like that. And she's just been such a wonderful spirit through a lot of what we do. And the other one is, I don't know if Dwayne saw this on Signal at the same time, our friend and ally, Kadita Kenner, who's the head of campaigns for the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center, is recovering from COVID. So that's great to hear. She's actually, it seems like she's going to be in a New Yorker piece. That's because she likely got it from being part of the Protect election protesting in Harrisburg. So we're really happy to hear that about her and look forward to hearing that. Okay, we're really, really done. There'll be outro music, you know, more chit chat. Somewhere, somebody will have to explain the partial church and farm.
Yeah, I like this.
You had it too?
It looks good to me.
He reads the recipe.
I read the recipe.
That sounds good.
You are being so unfair.
I like horseradish, though.
I read the recipe.
Horseradish, sour cream. I want to hear it. It's so good.